realize what I've done, don't you? That Everything Is Awesome song is going to be stuck in your head for the rest of the day. You're going to be riding down the road, everything is awesome. It's just going to get stuck there. We're going to start something new. It's a brand new year. Our focus is going to be commitment. We're going to talk about commitment all throughout the year. And we're going to start with this term, cost analysis. Now, if you run a business or you've been in accounting anywhere, you know what a cost analysis is. It's a business term. It's describing taking the cost of an action and weighing it against the possible profit. In doing a cost analysis, the business also has to learn to take into account taking no action, which is called opportunity cost. And so businesses make these decisions all the time, trying to figure out where to invest their money, how to put the profits to work in order to grow the business. So this is a term that business people are very familiar with, but you know what? Every commitment has a cost. We do cost analysis every single day in our life. Did you know that? If you've ever bought a house, you weighed the possibilities of the financial cost versus the benefit to your family. You didn't just pick your house off of Craigslist and say, you know what, we'll just take this one. No, you went and you walked through it. You looked at how many rooms was there, how many square feet there were, and you evaluated whether or not it would meet your needs. You do cost analysis when you have relationships, especially when you're dating. You know, you go out with the guy or the girl, and you start weighing their attributes and their positives against their negatives, and then you try to figure out if you could possibly live with this person, and you just go through this your entire life. And you know what? We kind of do a cost analysis when we follow Jesus. It's a spiritual one. We begin to look at our life and we begin to say, you know, if I do this church thing, what benefit is it to me? What is it that I'm going to get out of it? What is it that I'm going to have to put into it? And is the time I'm going to put into this church thing going to give me something that, well, really gets me something out of it? What's the cost versus what I get? And I guess what I really want to start off thinking about before we get too deep in this, I want to talk about this from a church perspective. It's our issue, Emmett's issue. Now, if you don't know who Emmett is, this is Emmett. I loaded the windows up, and I loaded the pulpit up with all these little plastic people, and they're going to stare at you for the whole service. Try to look out the window, they're going to stare back at you. But Emmett he's a generic construction worker from the Lego City series. You know, Legos have changed quite a bit in the world. Brandon and I were discussing this. We were having a conversation earlier this week. And when I was a kid, you would just go buy a bucket of Legos. And you know, when you bought the bucket, it had some instructions on how to make many different things. But usually as kids, we took the instructions and we threw them away and we just dumped the Legos on the floor and we started building. Just let our imaginations run wild. Nowadays, I go to the toy store with my sons, and we walk up and down the Lego aisles, and you don't see big buckets of Legos. You see kits and sets and models. See, Legos have changed, and it's this second Lego world that Emmett finds himself in, a land full of structure, a land that just doesn't make sense. See, because in Emmett's world, different is not acceptable. What is they said? Take everything weird and blow it up. Different just doesn't work there. In Emmett's world, well, structure's the goal. They want to build it just like the instructions there. They want to make sure everything is in its place. They want to make it just look just like the picture. In Emmett's world, well, they always follow the instructions. They never deviate one single step from the picture that's there. They're told to find their place to fit in, even if it means drinking coffee that costs $37. Well, we're getting there, folks. Who'd have thought a few years ago that we would think it's a privilege to go buy a cup of coffee for $5? But they're told to find their place to fit in. They're told not to make waves. And you know what? They're told, don't forget to smile. And I look at these attributes, and you know what I see a lot of times? Church. Isn't this us? Isn't this how we look at things? Don't we want things to be the same, to go by the structure, to go by the instruction book, to never deviate from anything one little ounce? Maybe we always want to see happy faces. And I just have to wonder, are we just happy plastic people? I played that song at the beginning of this worship service. Are we happy plastic people living in our plastic steeples? And I have to wonder this. And the good news is, I'm not the only one that wondered about whether people were really real or whether they were fake. Jesus had this same kind of thought process. See, Jesus warned that plastic people, well, there's a cost. There's a cost to being a plastic person. If you have your copy of God's Word, turn over to Matthew chapter 23, verses 13 through 32. And I want to look at the characteristics of a plastic person, and then I want to look at the cost. And there are actually seven characteristics. Right there in verses 13 through 14, we find out plastic people limit access to God. This is what he said to the Pharisees. "Woe to you teachers of the law, Pharisees, you hypocrites, you shut the door of the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. You yourselves do not enter, nor will you let those enter who are trying to." These Pharisees set up so many rules and regulations and so much structure that they actually limited people's access to God. As we move through the scripture, we find out these plastic people, well, they seek people to follow them and not God. "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You travel over land and sea to win a single convert, and when you have succeeded, you make them twice as much the child of hell as you are." See, the Pharisees were never looking for people to follow God. They simply wanted all of the attention. They wanted people to focus on themselves. They wanted people to say, "Look at me." As a matter of fact, they looked for loopholes in the law. That's what plastic people do. Verses 16 through 22 says, "Woe to you, blind guides. You say if anyone swears by the temple, it means nothing. But if anyone swears by the gold on the temple, it is bound by the oath. You blind fools, which is greater, the gold or the temple that makes the gold sacred? You also say if anyone swears by the altar, it means nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift on the altar, it is bound by that oath. You blind men, which is greater, the gift or the altar that makes the gift sacred? Therefore, anyone who swears by the altar swears by it and by everything on it. And anyone who swears by the temple swears by it and the one who dwells in it. And anyone who swears by heaven swears by God's throne and by the one who sits on it." These Pharisees, well, they had a bad habit. They wanted to look for ways that they could get out of things. Look for the little loopholes. You know, I don't really have to live the way God wants. I don't have to live a totally committed life. Only if I did it this way. It's kind of like when we were kids and we would make a promise and we put our hands behind our back. And what are we doing? We're crossing our fingers, because if I cross my fingers, what I promised really doesn't mean what I promised, right? That's what plastic people in a church do. They follow the letter of the law, but ignore the Spirit of God. This is what 23 through 24 says. "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites." He likes that word, doesn't he? "You give a tenth of your spices, mint and dill and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law. Justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglect of the former. You blind guides, you strain a gnat but swallow a camel." These plastic Pharisees, these people that were just trying to be impressive, they put their offering in the offering plate, but they had no mercy or compassion for anybody. They made sure that everybody saw that they knew how to keep the law, but in their heart, there was no commitment to it whatsoever. It says they focused on themselves. This is what 25 and 26 say. "Woe to you, teachers of the law, Pharisees, you hypocrites." Excuse me, I'm going to have one of those mornings. "You clean out the outside. You clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but the inside are full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisees, first clean out the inside of the cup and the dish, and then the outside will also be cleaned." You see, they wanted everybody to see, look at me, I'm clean. I'm smiling. I'm there. I'm real. But Jesus said, look inside of you. There's nothing. You're dirty. They were dead inside. That's how Jesus summed it up. 27 to 28. Woe to you, teachers of the law, Pharisees, you hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs. You look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside you are full of bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. It didn't seem like Jesus had a lot of use for these people. These little plastic people, the Pharisees, he's kind of taking them to task. And you know what? He should, because they became braggarts. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You build tombs for the prophets and decorate the graves of the righteous. And you say, if we had lived in those days, our ancestors, we would have not taken part with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. So you testify against yourselves that you are the descendants of those who murdered the prophets. Go ahead then and complete what your ancestors started. They say, hey, look, all these things that happened in the past, if we had been in charge then, none of that would have happened. We would have never killed a prophet. Ironically, I believe it was the Pharisees that just a few chapters later that were seeking to crucify Jesus, a man that they had deemed a prophet. So these are the characteristics of a plastic person. And I got to tell you, sometimes what I see, church people. We make ourselves look great, and we put on our best little clothes, and we put on our smiley faces, and we come and we sit in our little spot, and we think, I'm a happy plastic person. Look at me. But you know what? Jesus summed up about these plastic people. Well, they're all about appearance. They hide behind a mask. A mask that includes rules, tradition, self-seeking works. That's these plastic people. God is only good for what they get out of him. That's how Jesus saw these plastic people. And he pulled the covers back on him because he said, you know what? There's a cost to being plastic. You want to try to fake God out? You want to try to convince God that you've got it together when you don't? This is what Jesus says. Jesus said, you snakes, you brood of vipers, how will you escape being condemned to hell? These little plastic people had convinced themselves that everything was all right. Everything was good. I'm living my life like it should be lived. I am here and accounted for, just like the little people in the windows this morning. By the way, there's more of them than there is of us. Maybe I should have ran a competition this morning to see if you could guess how many there are. Wouldn't be fair because Caleb helped me build them, so he's raising his hands. I got it. There's about 100, just so you know that. But we come and we sit and we talk. And honestly, a lot of times, it's plastic. It's not real. Because if you turn just a few more pages, Jesus explains to us the difference between plastic and authentic. You can stay right there in Matthew. You only have to turn about a page and a half. While you're turning the page and a half, I'm going to take a little sip of water, see if I can stop coughing here for a moment. And we're going to take a look at how Jesus defined authentic people. See, because Jesus saw a difference between the Pharisees' religion and what it really meant to be a Christian, what it meant to be committed. And here's the first thing I want you to know. You think you got him fooled. Jesus knows who's who. This is what 31 and 33 say of Matthew chapter 25. When the Son of Man comes in all his glory and the angels with him, he will sit on his right on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people from one another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Jesus doesn't have to put up a debate. It doesn't even look like he's thinking about the process. Jesus can tell the difference between real and fake. Jesus can tell the difference between authentic and plastic. His term was sheep and goats. And so I want to take a look at, what does it mean to make it real? What is the standard that Jesus is going to use to determine whether or not we are real and committed or simply plastic and religious? This is what it says in 34 and 36. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance in the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." And the funny thing is, I don't see much church there, do you? Or do we? You see, Jesus defined it as, well, it's about getting physical. Listen to what he said. He talked about basic human needs, hunger, thirst, and clothes. He says, hey, look, you want to talk about being authentic? Look after those needs. Feed the hungry, quench the thirst, and clothe the naked. It has to get physical if it's going to get real. Sitting in a spot where you are and saying, I've done my part, that's not what Jesus is saying here. He's saying not only is it going to have to get physical, it's about ministering emotional. He talked about words like hospitality, welcoming people in. He talked about words like bedside manner, visiting people in the hospital. He talked about dealing with loneliness, the people in prison. That's how Jesus saw authentic Christianity. Now, just so you know, he's not giving a lesson to the pastors and the ministers or however we want to categorize that title. This is not a lesson for the elders. He said that the sheep were doing the ministering. The sheep were taking care of visiting the sick. The sheep were taking care of being hospitable. The sheep were taking care of visiting those that were lonely. All of us together, one level, ministering emotionally. So what about the spiritual? Because I look at Jesus' definition and I don't see him talking about Bible studies. I don't see him talking about any of this stuff that we usually associate with church. And I think the reason is because he understands what James was saying in James chapter 2, verses 15 and 16. Suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food, and if one says to them, go in peace, keep warm, and be well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? See, Jesus understood. You can't minister to a growling stomach. You can't minister to a freezing individual. You've got to be willing to meet needs first and then allow people to see how you're willing to meet a need. And after you're willing to meet a need, then you can take the next step and say, do you understand why I did what I did? It's because of what I am. That's a big difference in the way we think about church. That's the big difference, because Jesus isn't measuring it by how many rules and regulations you're touching. He's measuring it by how many lives you're changing. See, in verse 34, this was Jesus' measuring stick. This is what he said to the sheep. Come, you who are blessed by my Father. Take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. He told the sheep, the authentic people that were following God, hey, look, you get it. You understand it. You realize it's about ministering to others, and because of that, come and take your inheritance. But what about the goats? Well, verse 41 says, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. That sounds kind of stern, doesn't it? Jesus is taking this ministering thing a little too seriously, don't you? That's the stick. That's the standard. That if I have no love for other people, if I have no compassion for other people, that's how authentic Christianity is supposed to look? Well, that's what Jesus seems to think. It's that important. As a matter of fact, why is this so important? Well, look at verse 40. He's again talking to the sheep. The king will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." See, Jesus never saw ministering to people as ministering to people. It was called about ministering to Jesus. Ministering to who you say you've committed your life to. And because the sheep got that idea, because the sheep understood this is about Jesus and what Jesus wants me to do, now they understand authentic relationship. What about the goats? Well, he tells them in verse 45, he will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me." They shut the door on their opportunities to share Jesus with the world. See, that's the way this works. Jesus wanted us to understand, to be real, well, to be real means you are to see the world as Jesus saw it. It means you have to see ministry to others as ministry for Jesus. And that's a big, big difference in the way that we look at the world. And it'll make a big difference in the way that the world looks at us. But here's what you better know. There's a price tag. There is a cost for being real and authentic. See, that means you're going to have to get involved. Amazing thing about these little plastic people. If you didn't see the movie Lego, the Lego movie, I would recommend that you see it just because it's entertaining. Just once, though. After the first time, I want to tell you, it gets a little annoying, especially the Everything is Awesome song. It goes by me after the second time. But the whole idea behind the movie was that the man that was trying to build these models was gluing it in place because he wanted to put his models together so they would never change. And the little boy that wanted to play with the Legos didn't want the glue because you know what? Once you glued it, it never changed. You see, Lego people in and of themselves, if I left these sitting here, they would be sitting just like this next week. Unless Sherry dusts and then they'll be in the trash can somewhere. But they don't move on their own. They're formed and shaped and put together and they're assembled. And they are what they are. Real people, though, well, there's a cost. If I want to be real, if I want to be authentic, if I want to minister to people, you have to realize that Jesus stopped for those that got passed by. Think about Zacchaeus in the tree. The blind man on the side of the road. Jesus always had time to stop and talk to them. He was never in a hurry to get where he was going. That convicts me a lot. Because I always seem to be in a hurry to get where I'm going. Get it done so I can move on to the next thing just to cross it off my list. I'm a list person. Yeah, I'm one of those. Jesus touched the untouchable, didn't he? He saw people with leprosy and people that were dirty and people that had been downtrodden by society, ones that we kind of curl our toes up at a little bit and we make a little sneery marks at sometimes. Jesus stopped and touched them. He wasn't afraid of them. He saw them as the future of the church. That's a scary thought, isn't it? But that's being real. Jesus loved the unlovable. Didn't he? Others that people refused to have any interest in, Jesus showed interest in them. The woman that came crying for her daughter's life. saw herself as very lowly, Jesus, well, gave her a higher place. The woman at the well. All those people that deemed unlovable, Jesus said, you know what? I can love you. Jesus broke cultural barriers. He ministered to Samaritans. He ministered to Gentiles. He ministered to Roman soldiers. All of those people were enemies of the Jews. And Jesus said, I don't care. This is more important. If you're going to be real, this is what you're going to have to do. Jesus broke social barriers. Jesus ministered to women. That was a big deal in New Testament time. It was unheard of. But Jesus saw it as the right thing to do. And I just have to wonder, are you tired of the masquerade? Look around at the little people in the window. Some of them are short. Some of them are yellow. Some of them are kind of hideous looking. Some of them are made from skeleton bones, and some of them are made from monster masks. There are no two alike in the room. They all have different little things. I know they're a little different in the back. Trust me, there are no two alike. Not exactly. But you understand that all of these little plastic people, they're all Lego people. If we look out across our world, there are no two people alike. Some of us are short. Some of us are round, rounder after Christmas. Some of us are tall, and some of us have beards and mustaches, and some of us are hair challenged on top. There are males and females, different sizes, different shapes, different colors. But the funny thing is Jesus died for every single one of us. He didn't have this select little clique or club. He said anyone that's willing to evaluate their life and willing to pay the cost to follow me, you can be a sheep. But you know what you take out of that story, right? If you're not willing to pay the price to follow Jesus, he only had two categories. He had a goat and a sheep. He didn't have a shoat. Okay? There is no mixture. You were either a sheep or a goat. Either you were following or you weren't. It's an is or an ain't. You just kind of have to decide what cost do you want to pay? Are you satisfied with just being a happy plastic people? Sitting under our plastic steeple? Or do you want more out of life? Do you want Jesus to do something different with us? It's going to be costly if we choose different. But you know what? It's going to be costly if we don't.